We came into the World Anti-Communist League from a series of archive broadcasts on what we called the Aryan Nations, which was basically taking a sort of a general name for the confederation of right-wing groups here in the United States, domestic right-wing groups, and showing that instead of being a collection of ragtag fundamentalist weirdos and tax resistors who just like to run around carrying guns and spouting anti-Semitic and racist rhetoric, that in fact many of these groups had direct connections into higher echelons of military and intelligence and went back some 30, 40, or 50 years in terms of their antecedents in our political system. Then we'd started the World Anti-Communist League series back in January, and we took the concept that we're working on with Aryan Nations, and we put Aryan Nations in the perspective of this worldwide movement that has also been going on for many, many years, back to the turn of the century in the Russian Revolution in the latest incarnations, and began to talk about the worldwide network of these various right-wing, reactionary, anti-Semitic, racist, fascist groups. One very large section of it, and in fact probably the largest section of it, is an umbrella organization by the name of the World Anti-Communist League, and its tentacles, as it were, crop up in all kinds of political matters. And we're going to be examining tonight how, just to take a few current topics, one of them being Central America and the Contra resistance, quote-unquote, to the Sandinistas in Central America, and the assassination of Olaf Palme appear, both of them, not only to be interlinked in a more general way, but also to be specifically a part of the larger actions of the World Anti-Communist League. So this is not the kind of thing that's just sort of like baseball trivia or something that's to while away long hours in front of a fireplace on a winter evening. This is stuff that is vital. This is stuff that is happening right now. And, as we've also mentioned many times, the current administration, the people who are in charge of our government, bear the strongest ties yet of any administration, almost unashamed, unabashed ties to these various groups of the World Anti-Communist League, and they are allowing, in many cases, the World Anti-Communist League to be the determinant of U.S. foreign policy. And we're going to be talking about all of that tonight and a variety of other things.
Okay, now the basic thesis that we presented last time about the World Anti-Communist League concerns our assertion, and it's been made by obviously many other people, that what WACL really is a regrouping of the old anti-Comintern nations, the Axis nations of World War II. We've looked at the fact that there are four basic branches to the World Anti-Communist League. There is, first of all, the North American branch, the American Security Council, which we've spoken about. That really is not exactly coterminous with, but a very key element of the Aryan Nations' American fascist umbrella that we talked about in Radio Free America's number 10 through 13. Now, we've looked, in our last show, we looked at the North American branch, we looked at the Asian branch of the World Anti-Communist League, the China Lobby, the Moonies, and so forth, and then we took a look at the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, the ABN. We're going to be taking up the ABN this evening at considerable length. Before that, we're going to take a look at the CAL, the Latin American, the fourth major branch of the World Anti-Communist League. And as with the other three branches, we are going to trace it and examine it as a development of and a recombining of the fascist elements which were very active during the time of Hitler and Mussolini and cooperating with all kinds of people, including various American industrialists. Now, after that, we're going to deal with the World Anti-Communist League and its role in the assassination of President Kennedy. We've looked at the Aryan Nations and their role. We're going to sort of dolly out still further and take a look at how President Kennedy's policies towards the USSR upset the ABN, and in turn take a look at the World Anti-Communist League as a whole, and in particular the elements grouped around the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations and their role in the assassination of President Kennedy. Now, one of the things that we're going to be looking at in particular are some tie-ins with people that have been involved with Alger Hiss, specifically Whitaker Chambers, Isaac Don Levine, Richard Nixon, and we're going to be taking a look at all of those people in connection with the assassination of Kennedy. One of the themes of our examination of WACL and the Kennedy assassination will be that the elements which during the late 50s and early 60s were actively combining and grouping into the World Anti-Communist League were still further drawn together. A major element in that grouping together was the assassination of President Kennedy. It was both a goal and actually, in a sense, a means to the end of forming the World Anti-Communist League, which formally took place in 1967. As we looked at last time, and as we're going to be looking at this time, there are a lot of different elements which combined into WACL over this period of time. One of our major theses is going to be is that the Kennedy assassination itself was a major element in the coalescing of the World Anti-Communist League. And we're going to take a look also at some parallels with the assassination of Olof Palme. And that's what we're going to be looking at tonight.
Okay, now again, just to caution those of you who are newcomers to this kind of broadcast, this is not the sort of racy, up-tempo sort of a thing we do on One Step Beyond on Sunday evenings. As Dave and I have been emphasizing, this is going to be very information-heavy. We're going to be throwing a lot of names at you. It's the kind of thing where even if you tape it, you will probably only want to listen to it for 45 minutes or an hour at a time at the most. Even Dave and I get a little bamboozled by the multiplicity of names that we throw around, because this is very complicated stuff with decades of intermixing of groups and intergroup rivalries and all kinds of stuff. So please do not feel that if you cannot sit and listen through the whole broadcast tonight that you are somehow unworthy or that you have failed to pass any kind of test. It's very difficult stuff, but we feel it's very important stuff, and we essentially look at this as a reference work. And so please do tape and put the tape aside and go back to it and take it piece by piece if you want to, and use it to refer to when we talk about other kinds of things of this sort.
There's roughly a month between each of our archive shows, each Radio Free America show, and they generally yield 4 to 5 45-minute sides on a C90. So you could take one side each week and make some notes, go over it, and that'll get you up to date by about the next program. Good way of doing it.
Okay, now, starting with tonight's broadcast, as Dave mentioned, the first thing we are going to examine this time, as opposed to the last broadcast, where we focused largely on the American branches and the Asian branches.
As well as ABN, although we're going to be coming back to ABN.
Well, ABN we will be coming back to. We're going to start out with the Latin American branch. Now, there's a couple of things you have to realize before this all will begin to make sense to you. Well, first of all, obviously, if you didn't hear last month's broadcast, month before last, the most important thing here is that when we say KMT or Kuomintang, we are talking about the secret police of Chiang Kai-shek, who are very heavily involved because of their direct contacts with the CIA. They were very heavily involved in the early days of the coalescing of the World Anti-Communist League, even in Latin America, as we'll see in this first article I'm going to read. The other thing, again, now bear in mind that, as you will see later in the broadcast, with the Latin American branch of the World Anti-Communist League, now they're going to be talking originally about the 1950s. This is still in force today. It is a very crucial factor in El Salvador, in Nicaragua, in Bolivia, in Brazil, all over Latin America, and is, as a matter of fact, as we will also see, is largely responsible for Latin American death squad activity. So this is something that is happening right now. So understand that when we're talking about the 1950s and the origin of some of these groups. The first article that I'm going to read from tonight is from a book called The Great Heroin Coup, Drugs, Intelligence, and International Fascism. The book is copyright 1980 by South End Press. It's written by a Danish journalist, Henrik Kruger, okay, K-R-U-G-E-R, an excellent book which we've used quite a bit here on KFJC. Kruger writes, in 1953 to 1954, the CIA drew on old China hands with exposure to Kuomintang traffic, namely Chenault, Willauer, William Pauley, Howard Hunt, to set up the overthrow of the Arbenz government in Guatemala, an operation which at least contemplated the use of, quote, Puerto Rican and Cuban gangsters. Let me just mention real quickly, the Arbenz government in Guatemala was a legally, democratically elected government, but Arbenz himself, people in the United States felt, was too close to the leftist elements in his own country. Again, mind you, this man is the legally and democratically elected president, so we helped to put together, the CIA put together a counter coup that overthrew the Arbenz government and destroyed democracy in Guatemala for 30 years. And for 30 years, of course, Guatemala has been the worst center of torture and terror of Latin America. So that's what they're talking about here. As part of this operation, we see CIA officer Howard Hunt, a veteran, with his friend Lucien Conin and Conin's friend Mitch Werbel of OSS operations in China under Helliwell, helping in 1954 to set up what would eventually become the Latin American branch of the KMT, the Kuomintang-backed World Anti-Communist League. 4 years later, the chairman of this group was the Guatemalan attorney of New Orleans mafia leader Carlos Marcello. So, couple of points real quickly. What we're seeing here is in 1954, at the time, the CIA setting up a private army under CIA veterans to overthrow the legitimate government of Guatemala. This in contact with the Kuomintang and the Kuomintang's drug traffic and other methods of funding itself became the basis for the World Anti-Communist League in Latin America. You will also notice the appearance of the Guatemalan attorney of mafiosa Carlos Marcello. Carlos Marcello will crop up later in 1963 when he plays a key part in the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
Also connected with David Ferry, one of the main people around 544 Camp Street, one of the two addresses that served both as the headquarters of the campaign, the Free Cuba Committee, and the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, excuse me, and also served as the basis for the Cuban Revolutionary Council, the umbrella group formed by, among others, E. Howard Hunt to subsume all of the anti-Castro Cuban groups under one umbrella for the U.S. intelligence establishment. Note also that we have an evolution here, going back to our Aryan nations. We looked at the MacArthur group, the many fascists on MacArthur's staff, MacArthur's own connections to the Morgan Financial Group and Industrial Group, and we looked at how the China lobby was intimately connected with and grew out of the MacArthur group, and in turn, how the China lobby became, as indicated here, the Guatemalan lobby, and then eventually the Cuban lobby with the formation of the so-called Cuban Fry Corps in relation to the Bay of Pigs and Operation 40. Now, remember also, carrying on with that same theme, that the formation of the CAL, the Latin American branch of the World Anti-Communist League, was originally formed by U.S. intelligence, and as we're going to see, it basically is, for all intents and purposes, a front for U.S. intelligence or elements thereof, and even though it is in drastic conflict to many the values of the United States, it's basically a U.S. intelligence operation. Reading now from Crime and Cover-Up, subtitled The CIA, the Mafia, and the Dallas Watergate Connection, authored by UCal Berkeley professor Peter Dale Scott. It's published by Westworks Publisher in Berkeley and is copyrighted 1977. Reading now from Crime and Cover-Up by Peter Dale Scott. The CIA had long used the Mafia's corrupt influence in Caribbean dictatorships as an asset in its own anti-communist arsenal. Thus, the chairman of a 1958 anti-communist conference in Guatemala, of a group organized for the CIA 4 years earlier by E. Howard Hunt, was Antonio Valladares, V-A-L-L-A-D-A-R-E-S, the law partner of the CIA-installed Minister of the Interior and the attorney for New Orleans mafioso Carlos Marcello. Valladares once arranged for Marcello's false birth registration in Guatemala. Present at the 1958 meeting was a New Orleans lawyer, Maurice B. Gatlin, who was also involved in other anti-communist activities at the 544 Camp Street address used by Lee Harvey Oswald. So keep in mind, not only Valladares, his relationship with Marcello, his chairing of the CAL, the Latin branch of the World Anti-Communist League, begun out of the Arbenz coup set up by U.S. intelligence and set up by eventual Watergate burglar E. Howard Hunt. But keep in mind also that Maurice Brooks Gatlin, who fell from the window of a Panama hotel, that he is a key member and present at the same 1958 conference, because we're going to be coming back not only to the CAL and U.S. intelligence, but also eventually to the Wackles' role in the assassination of President Kennedy.
Right now, we're going to be coming back immediately, as a matter of fact, to CAL, because we're going to be talking about CAL's involvement in the death squads of Latin America. And running parallel at the same time, although I won't keep talking about it all night, is the fact that CAL and these groups right now are very heavily involved with with Anastasio Somoza's guardsmen, National Guardsmen in Nicaragua, the people who are right now being used as the actual military leaders of the Contra military action, and the rest of the World Anti-Communist League is being lined up behind these people to get them funding, and John Singlaub, American General John Singlaub, ex of the John Birch Society, now running the World Anti-Communist League branch, has entree right into the Oval Office and is taking orders directly from Ronald Reagan. So bear in mind when we're reading this Jack Anderson column that these people are working as de facto American agents.
Also remember now, too, that the death squads in El Salvador, as we're going to see in more detail, are intimately connected and, in fact, run by this group.
Okay, reading from Jack Anderson's column from San Francisco Chronicle for January 12, 1984. The headline is International Death Squads. behind the violence in Latin America are not only left-wing guerrillas, but right-wing assassins who belong to death squads. I have learned, Anderson writes, there's an international league of death squads which operate from Mexico to Argentina. Ordinarily, they maintain the strictest secrecy about their operations, but through a contact in the Honduran secret police, my associate, John Lee Anderson, arranged a face-to-face interview in Honduras with an outspoken leader and founder of the Honduran Death Squad. He is a thin, fair-haired man in his 30s, who I will call El Lobo, the wolf. By day, he is a doctor at the National Hospital in Tegucigalpa. By night, he is an assassin for ELA, the Spanish acronym for Anti-Communist Combat Army. The ELA is a relatively new death squad, founded in 1979. Unlike its counterparts in Guatemala, El Salvador, and Argentina, the ELA is not made up primarily of paramilitary security forces, according to El Lobo. The ELA had close ties, he said, with the Maximiliano Hernández Martínez Brigade in El Salvador. This is the group that recently slaughtered 9 members of a peasant cooperative, including 2 pregnant women, as part of a stepped-up campaign of terror. Human rights groups estimate that 40,000 people have died in El Salvador since 1980. About half of those were civilians who were suspected of leftist leanings and were murdered by the death squads. El Lobo expressed admiration for the Salvadoran death squad and the general whose name it took. General Hernandez was a Salvadoran dictator who ordered the massacre of an estimated 30,000 Indians and peasants after a communist-backed uprising in the 1930s. El Lobo gave this account of the International Fraternity of Death Squads, quote, "We go to annual conferences. I went to last year's. It was in Buenos Aires. The AAA put it on." He was not referring to an automobile association, but to the Argentine Anti-Communist Alliance. This is a clandestine confederation of police, military, and paramilitary goons responsible for thousands of murders and other disappearances during the, quote, "dirty war" of the 1970s. The overall umbrella group for the Death Squad network is CAL, CAL, Latin American Anti-Communist Confederation, based in Mexico. CAL, or CAL, is our political front, said El Lobo. We are all La Mano Blanca. La Mano Blanca, the white hand, is the name for the warning white glove or handprint left on or near a victim's body. According to a former CIA dirty tricks specialist, La Mano Blanco was set up by the CIA in Guatemala in the 1950s after the agency engineered the ouster of leftist president Jacobo Arbenz. Although now a member of La Mano Blanco's network, the Honduran Death Squad organization was set up independently, El Lobo said. Quote, 85 of us, mostly graduate students, got together and formed ELA, he said. We were tired of Marxist control of the student union and faculty, the labor unions. We wanted to do what the military legally couldn't do to stop them. With a laugh, the doctor assassin said of his bloody work, quote, "We call it environmental sanitation," unquote. Okay, again, now notice the fact that La Mano Blanco, the very concept in this case of this sort of controlled, organized terror comes again out of the CIA coup in the 1950s, in 1954 specifically, that we just read about, that contact between the then beginnings of the World Anti-Communist League, the Kuomintang, the China lobby, and the CIA special Latin American branches, bringing those all together and eventually connecting back into various other American groups, including organized crime, as we will talk about later. Again, notice that these groups are not, just as we were talking about during the Aryan Nations, these are not groups who just happen to be a bunch of nutcases running around in the jungles. These are people who get together and have conventions. They have conferences. They sponsor seminars. These people are well organized, and in many cases, one of the reasons they're well organized is because they are being supported by yours and my tax dollars.
Okay, continuing now with the development of the CAL, and in particular its connections to U.S. intelligence and international fascism. Jack Anderson's column from the next day, following the article Niptuck read you, specifically the San Francisco Chronicle of Friday, January 13, 1984, is entitled International Murder Incorporated. It continues with the same theme. Operating at the subterranean level of Latin American politics is a far-flung network of affiliated death squads. Their purpose? To intimidate suspected leftists and deter movements that threaten the status quo throughout Latin America. Their methods? Kidnapping and assassinations, secret pacts, intrigues, terrorism, and blackmail. But what is truly appalling is the possibility that the idea of an anti-communist murder incorporated was germinated at CIA headquarters. Sources familiar with the secret history, including a former covert operations specialist for the CIA, say the death squads were first formed under agency sponsorship in 1954. This is denied by CIA officials. Dedicated to the physical elimination of suspected leftists, they recruited assassins from the military services, police forces, and security agencies of right-wing governments. And again, hearkening back to the theme developed both during Aryan Nations and our first Wackle show, the World Anti-Communist League and the closely affiliated Reagan administration are sort of the ultimate exponents of the Freikorps methodology. And again, the Freikorps and what that was explained in great detail in those broadcasts. That basically were the Nazi death squads who paved Hitler's rise to power and served as the model for, apparently, and there are intimate connections, served as the model for the Wackle. And the Contras, the El Salvadorian death squads, and so forth. Continuing with Anderson's account. Today, the death squads are most active in El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. Dormant death squads exist in almost every other Latin American nation. In all these countries, they are protected by high-level military and government officials. Their activities are loosely controlled and coordinated by a sinister international organization known as La Mano Blanco, the White Hand. Quote, "Our movements are all coordinated out of Mexico City," unquote, said a leader of the Honduran death squad. The name of the front group there is CAL, Latin American Anti-Communist Confederation. CAL is the Latin American affiliate of the World Anti-Communist League, a right-wing organization linked to ultra-conservative groups in Asia, Europe, and the United States. A Mexican intelligence source said CAL was founded by a neo-Nazi splinter group after World War II. As we're going to see, this group actually got going before World War II and has about a 50-year continuous record of activity on behalf of fascism. Continuing, CAL is also called the White Hand, the White Force, and the White Brigade, said this source. So, again, this death squad network that we're talking about here was founded by and sponsored by U.S. intelligence, and as we've seen with the Galen organization that we're going to be coming back to, the Nazi Eastern Front Intelligence Organization, in its anti-communist zeal, our intelligence system has never hesitated to use fascists, old or new.
Okay, now lest people who listen to these broadcasts and wonder why we keep talking about things like Ronald Reagan's desire to send hundreds of millions of dollars to the Contras, why we link these things up with, say, the Nazis and the coming of Nazism to Europe in the 1930s and the prosecution of the war during the 1940s by the Nazis, why we keep linking these kinds of things together. Again, just to continue along this chain of the development of the Latin American death squads, bear these things in mind and keep these questions in your mind while I'm reading this article, again from the San Francisco Chronicle, another Jack Anderson column for February 9th, 1984, headlined Anti-Semitic Death Squads. The jackboot and the swastika lurk behind the continuing slaughter of tens of thousands of Latin Americans by right-wing death squads. This is the inescapable conclusion of a year-long investigation by my staff. Hitler's thousand-year Reich collapsed in smoking ruins nearly 40 years ago. But the Nazis' ugly concepts of anti-Semitism and racial purity have survived among right-wing elements in Latin American countries. Some of them gave refuge to Nazi war criminals. Sources close to President Reagan tell me he is growing increasingly concerned at U.S. support for governments that condone these right-wing murderers. He has told intimates that he wants to take a tougher position against the death squad's activities. I agree. Parenthetically, I would have to insert that I think his tougher position is to send them a lot of money in hopes that they become the government real quickly so they're not so embarrassing.
Humanitarian aid, it's called.
Humanitarian aid, excuse me. I sent my associate, Anderson writes, John Lee Anderson, to Guatemala and Honduras, and my associate Dale Van Atta to Argentina, Paraguay, and Chile to investigate reported links among the Latin American death squads. They found persuasive evidence that the Latin American Anti-Communist Confederation, an affiliate of the once-respected World Anti-Communist League, has been used as a front for the region's assassination groups. Again, I don't know quite who once respected the World Anti-Communist League, but Jack Anderson has just become sort of born again on the subject of death squads, and he can be forgiven, perhaps, having a little shaky grasp on the previous history of the World Anti-Communist League. Here are some additional frightening details. The men who run WACL out of Guadalajara, Mexico, and appear to give several death squads their marching orders, belong to a secret society run by powerful anti-Semitic businessmen and lawyers. Sources in WACL say the Guadalajara group uses its anti-Semitic credentials to solicit money from wealthy Arabs, whom they refer to as Turcos, Turks. One WACL letter, World Anti-Communist League letter, in my possession discloses that these Middle East sources pledged at least $50,000 to the League's 1978 conference in Washington. Convincing evidence that the death squad's front groups are more enthusiastic in their anti-Semitism than in their anti-communism is the World Anti-Communist League's willingness to have representatives of the Palestine Liberation Organization speak at its meetings. The PLO is Soviet-backed. We'll put an asterisk next to that one, and we'll come back to that also. One former top official of WACL is a notorious proponent of the Nazis' super-race theories. In fact, some of his moderate WACL colleagues wrote in an internal document that any group he supports gives them, quote, immediate cause for alarm and suspicion that the organization recommended is an anti-Semitic, racist, neo-Nazi, or pro-Nazi organization working under the label of national or nationalist. Ever since World War II, right-wing militarists in Latin America have idealized the Nazi war machine. Germans of the Hitler era, are still depicted as supermen in certain Latin American magazines. When death squads gather, they speak with awe of their Nazi prototypes, and some even wear swastikas. Okay, now skipping down through the points in this article, Ronald Reagan's uneasiness with the right-wing murderers is kind of an entertaining thought, considering the fact that the very people he's supporting right now so strenuously in Nicaragua are most of them all the key military people are ex-Somocista National Guardsmen who are all very much connected into this, and the people who are funding them now are all people who are also very much connected into the World Anti-Communist League and the death squads. When they talk about the men who run the World Anti-Communist League out of Guadalajara, Mexico, we're going to talk about them a little bit later. But again, to suggest that they are at the top of the pyramid is perhaps to miss the point, which is who organized that pyramid in the first place and who placed these people at the top of the pyramid. We're going to be talking about the Guadalajarans a little later on in the broadcast. Okay, skipping on down, again, now it is interesting that the PLO, or representatives of the PLO show up at the World Anti-Communist League's meetings. The PLO is ostensibly Soviet-backed, although as we've observed from time to time, there are numerous connections on behalf of the CIA within the PLO, and we've detailed those in past Radio Free Americas, and we will be talking about them in upcoming ones, as a matter of fact. And again, you have to look at certain segments of the Palestine Liberation Organization, which never do actually the cause of the Palestinians any good whatsoever, and their strident embrace of their contact with the Soviet Union right after they've blown up a bunch of innocent tourists somewhere is the kind of thing that tends to give the Soviet Union a real bad name. And it's interesting that these people would then be also showing up at World Anti-Communist League meetings.
Okay, now the CAL, based in Guadalajara, the Mano Blanco, the White Hand, is also called Los Ticos, actually that's the name of the fascist society in Guadalajara that runs it. And apparently, a victim, or at least a very strong possibility, is that a man named Buendia, one of the key Mexican journalists of the past couple of decades, was a victim of Los Ticos of the CAL coming out of Guadalajara. Research credit for the following story goes to Ted Rubenstein, an excellent researcher who's been sharing his work with us for some time. Ted got this for us from the Financial Times of London, specifically from their issue, the Financial Times issue of June 7th, 1984. The article's called Journalist's Murder Stuns Mexicans. It's by Financial Times reporter David Gardner in Mexico City. Last week's assassination of Manuel Buendia, B-U-E-N-D-I-A, Mexico's most widely read newspaper columnist, has set off a chain of political tremors, not because gun-toting Mexicans are unaccustomed to violence, but because the killing appears to break all the rules by which violence is normally exercised. Señor Buendia specialized in denouncing corruption and the abuse of power, the CIA's activities in Mexico, and as we've seen with their connection to, interrupting here, as we've seen with the CIA's connections to CAL, it being based in Guadalajara and being the nexus of all of these Latin American death squads, that the CIA's activities in CAL would appear to be heavily interlocking here. Anyway, continuing with a sentence. Senior Buendia specialized in denouncing corruption and the abuse of power, the CIA's activities in Mexico, and the far right, which centers on the Roman Catholic Church hierarchy and allied organizations such as the Opus Dei, sectors of private business, and perceived U.S. interference in local affairs. We'll be coming to the Opus Dei in our five-part series about the shooting of the Pope in May. Continuing. The cutting edge of this alliance is located either in traditional right-wing parties like the Opposition and National Action Party, PAN, or in more sinister groups such as the so-called TECOS, T-E-C-O-S, a fascist paramilitary organization which has virtually taken over the University of Guadalajara. Investigation into the killings center on TECOS, the subject of several recent denunciations by Señor Buendía. As zealots, the TECOS would not necessarily abide by unwritten conventions on discreetly disposing of one's enemies. More than 30 journalists have been murdered in Mexico since 1971. Two more were killed shortly after Señor Buendía's death. But there have been no recent incidents of so brazen an attack on such a public figure as Señor Buendía, whose murder breaks the mold of Mexico's semi-institutionalized violence. So keep in mind the fate of Mr. Buendía, what he was investigating, CIA activities in Mexico, perceived American interference in local affairs, and also Los Tecos. And as we're going to see in the column, which the Jack Anderson column, which Nip Tuck is going to take up right now, those would appear to be largely interlocking organizations. But Los Tecos is the name of the parafascist group, which that article referred to, which has taken over the University of Guadalajara and which, for all intents and purposes, could be thought of as the spider at the center of the Latin American death squad web, the CAL web.
Okay, this Jack Anderson column is from September 11, 1984. The headline is Mexico's Neo-Nazis. Anderson writes, "The heart of Latin American death squad activity beats most strongly in Guadalajara, Mexico. This is the conclusion of knowledgeable sources interviewed by my associates Dale Van Atta and John Lee Anderson. The first clue came last year when an admitted Honduran death squad member told Anderson that his group and others like it received direction from Mexico. He identified the coordinating organization as CAL, the initials of the World Anti-Communist League's Latin American affiliate. After my report was published, the League belatedly kicked CAL out of the international body. The League's U.S. head, retired Army General John Singlaub, told my office CAL had, quote, knowingly promoted pro-Nazi groups, unquote, and was, quote, virulently anti-Semitic, unquote. That was putting it mildly. CAL has been directed by a secret order called Los Tecos, based in Guadalajara. The secret society grew out of a right-wing counter-revolutionary force known as Los Cristeros during the Mexican Revolution early in this century. Los Tecos was linked with Hitler's Third Reich when one of its leaders spent time in Berlin studying the Nazi regime. He then infused Los Tecos with a dogma that made enemies of Jews, Jesuits, and communists, with a bit of medieval Nordic mythology thrown in. CAL Tecos propaganda, published in their magazine Replica, went clearly around the bend, with weird stories about Jews, witches, drug addicts, and homosexuals taking over the Vatican. During his visit to Mexico, Pope John Paul II was elevated by these propagandists from a homosexual drug addict to the Antichrist. A League official described his ousted ex-colleagues in Guadalajara as, quote, extremely bizarre and very crazy. He said the World Anti-Communist League had linked Los Tecos' anti-Semitic publishing efforts to neo-Nazi writers and translators in Europe and this country. Los Tecos exerts behind-the-scenes control of the Autonomous University in Guadalajara, which was financed partly by the U.S. government and private U.S. foundations in the 1960s. Former Los Tecos members say the group obtains funds through grants and scholarship money, given to the university and laundered for Los Tecos' quote, political activities. Los Tecos tries determinedly to convert the university students to its brand of bigotry. And while the National University in Mexico City is so chaotic that few students ever get their degrees, the one in Guadalajara has security guards to keep order, so it is possible for the neo-Nazis to graduate. Okay, now again, looking at this article, talking about all the things that we've been talking about the connections between Los Tecos and CAL and the death squads and the World Anti-Communist League. Again, the reason that we read so many different sources on these things is because everything adds up. And here we've got something that is not quite clear. And just reading part of this one paragraph where Jack Anderson writes, Los Tecos exerts behind-the-scenes control of the Autonomous University in Guadalajara, which was financed partly by the U.S. government and private U.S. foundations in the 1960s. Okay, which suggests that some kind of a friendship gesture that the United States sent some money to Mexico and they used it to form a university, and then these lunatics, Los Tecos, came in afterward and began to mess up the whole thing for everybody. Again, this is not quite the case, and Los Tecos did not appear out of nowhere, and this university did not appear out of nowhere, and as so often happens in these cases, specifically when you've got the United States government dealing with Latin America, there are ulterior motives, and these things have sources that we are not often told about directly.
Okay, now keep in mind that the CAL grew out of the Arbenz overthrow and was started by old members from the China lobby. Of course, a key element of the World Anti-Communist League. Keep in mind the connections to U.S. intelligence and later to the assassination of Kennedy. And now we're going to take a look at some of the funding that the Autonomous University of Guadalajara, which I guess you could think of as the wrist of the white hand, okay, the mano blanco, in that it appears to direct all of the fingers of the death squads in Latin America. The next several articles we're going to be reading all come from the Albuquerque Journal's issue of Sunday, December 15th, 1985. They ran a long series about the Autonomous University of Guadalajara and Los Tecos and the World Anti-Communist League, and research credit for this goes to Ted Rubenstein. There are several articles, almost all of them by Craig Pies, P-Y-E-S, an Albuquerque Journal writer. One of them is also by a woman named Mary Engel, also an Albuquerque Journal writer, okay? Now, the first, again, reading now, all the next several articles are going to come from the Albuquerque Journal of Sunday, December 15th, 1985. This following article is called Texas Professor's Vision Fathered Golden Age, unquote. Again, by Craig Pies of the Albuquerque Journal, it reads, the man who brought the Autonomous University of Guadalajara into its golden age was Dr. Oscar F. Weigand, W-I-E-G-A-N-D, a zoology professor at the University of Texas. Weigand, or Weigand, I'm not sure whether he's German or whether he's American, but say Weigand, put together an alliance in the early 1970s that joined the university's ultra-conservative TECO leaders with the U.S. State Department and liberal American foundations and universities to finance and advise them on a long-range development plan. It was designed to transfer the small college of a few thousand students attending classes in rambling old houses into what Weigand hoped would be a model university for Latin America. Skipping down on the article. In addition to funding, Weigand's proposal included a plan of cooperation with 13 American universities to participate in academic and research sectors with the Autonoma. Again, an active plan was established with this funding to coordinate the Autonomous University of Guadalajara with 13 American universities, and we're going to be coming back to that. Continuing with Craig Pye's article. The University of New Mexico was one of the schools that began its relationship with the school early on. The initial solicitations to the United States went out on U.S. Foreign Service stationery supplied by the American Embassy in order to avoid political repercussions for the Mexican government, which for reasons of national pride is uncomfortable with U.S. assistance. Weigand said the American role in developing the university was downplayed. He said he was able to interest embassy officials in his project because the Autonomo was run by people who were, quote, tremendously active ideologically and practically against communism, unquote, which, as far as it goes, is true. There's a whole lot more to it than that, as we shall see. Continuing with the article, I was referred to by the Mexicans as the man in gray, unquote, he said. Many Mexicans believe to this day I was a Secret Service man who had been sent there on a covert operation to help them build a university against communism. Of course, this wasn't true. Take that last statement with a grain of salt here. Almost from the start, the project received the enthusiastic backing of senior State Department officials, particularly Thomas Mann, former ambassador to Mexico, under Kennedy, and later Assistant Secretary of State for Inter-American Affairs under Lyndon Johnson. Correspondence between the university and the Rockefeller Foundation, which entertained but eventually turned down an Autonomo request for development funds, shows that Mann's office handled the Washington details for funding between state, the U.S. Agency for International Development, and some U.S. universities. Mann's office went so far as to schedule foundation appointments for the university's rector, Luis Garibay, in New York. We'll be talking about Garibay later. At least 60% of the $8 million Wiegand requested to implement his plan came from U.S. sources. Foundation records show the Ford Foundation provided seed money to train faculty and established fundraising and public relations offices. The State Department financed faculty exchange programs with the United States, and AID provided an unusual $3 million loan, which is still being paid off. The loan was unusual because AID money at the time seldom was provided for privately owned development. So the State Department, the U.S. Agency for International Development, which has been heavily involved in Latin American police work and death squad activity, the book State of Siege by A.J. Langeth about the career of Dan Mitrione, which of course was made, the book Hidden Terrors, rather, by A.J. Langeth, which is about Dan Mitrione, was made into a film called State of Siege by Costa Gavras, talks about the AID role in death squads and torture in Latin America. Remember now, too, that not only was this autonomous university pumped up by the U.S. government here, again, the State Department heavily involved, the Rockefeller Foundation was considering a huge loan, but eventually Luis Garibé, who we're going to talk about, is shipped to New York. So basically what we're talking about here is a U.S. government operation. Keep in mind that the CAL, to begin with, was in essence founded by U.S. intelligence following the Arbenz overthrow. Keep in mind also the connection between this group and 13 American universities.
Okay. Now, again, from that same Albuquerque Journal, there is an article that talks about some American schools in particular, and in this case, the University of New Mexico, and their worries because of their own involvement with the UAG, the Universidad Autónoma de Guadalajara, the Autonomous University of Guadalajara that we've just been talking about. This article is headlined, Schools Ties Questioned, UNM Faculty Committee's Recommendation Due This Month. The article is written by Mary Engel, an Albuquerque Journal staff writer. A University of New Mexico faculty committee is expected to recommend this month whether UNM should sever its ties to a Mexican university with rumored links to neo-Nazis and Latin American death squads. UNM President Tom Ferrer named the committee last summer after some professors complained that UNM's association with the Autonomous University in Guadalajara, or UAG, could jeopardize its standing with other Latin American universities. Ferrer will decide whether to continue the exchange programs after the committee submits its report. Skipping down in the article, under an informal agreement with a Guadalajara university, about 25 University of New Mexico students and a UNM professor use classrooms, office space, and housing services each summer for an intensive Spanish language program. UAG is closed during the summer, so UNM students do not actually attend UAG classes. In exchange, University of New Mexico offers two scholarships each year to its Intensive English Institute for UAG students or professors. There is no exchange of money, and has not been over the 18-year involvement, Slavin said. This is a school official. In addition to the summer Spanish classes, the UNM Law School began an exchange program 2 years ago. Law students go to Guadalajara for 4 to 5 weeks to work with a UAG program that provides free legal services for the poor. In 1984, UNM reciprocated by inviting 4 law students and a professor to University of New Mexico for a 3.5-week course on immigration law, human rights, Indian law, and English. Again, no money is exchanged. The arrangement is an informal one set up by University of New Mexico law professor Chuck Dumars after a year-long stay in Guadalajara. So the University of New Mexico is beginning to be concerned about its contacts, which are still small, but the University of New Mexico, of course, is not the only place that has had contacts with this organization. We're going to talk about that a little later on in the broadcast. The Autonomous University in Guadalajara has actually become a home away from home for certain types of American students, but we will get to that later on.